Good afternoon. Scott Spears along with you on this Monday, July the 31st, 2017. 14 coming up on 15 minutes past the hour. The last day of July 2017. Can you believe that? We head into those lazy, crazy, hazy dog days of August starting tomorrow. But we're going to send out July with a bang today because we have got a great program. I want to tell you real quick what's coming up next hour. Jack Brickhouse, legendary Chicago Cubs announcer, of course passed away many years ago, 1998. But last week, close to Wrigley Field, the Brickhouse Tavern was opened in his honor, and his widow, Pat Brickhouse, was on hand for that. She's been on the show many times. And next hour, we're going to talk with Pat about the new Brickhouse Tavern in Chicago and all the great things going on there. But this hour, you don't want to go anywhere. We've got a guest who's been on this show a couple times before. We're going to have to get him on more regularly because he is absolutely hilarious. He was one of, if not, Johnny Carson's favorite guest on his many appearances over the Tonight Show over the years. He knew all the big movers and shakers in Hollywood, in Las Vegas, because he was headlining there himself. He is the one and only legendary comedian, Shecky Green. Shecky, how are you?
Hi, I'm Scott.
Yes.
Listen, I was listening to the obituary, and I was so glad my name wasn't there.
I know. That's kind of a somber thing to follow, isn't it?
No, when you listen to it, you know, you're going to say, do I know that person? But the one guy had 13 grandchildren, and that was a nice family.
He had
listen,
a good one.
Jack Brickhouse and I were very, very close friends. I'm from Chicago.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, that was one of the greatest people in the world.
You know, Jack Brickhouse had a way of calling a game. He could do anything.
Yeah, but he was a lovely man, yes.
Yeah, and then
when you talk to his wife, please tell her I said hello.
I certainly will do that. And his new restaurant opened last week, so you can go get a Brickhouse burger.
Well, I don't think I can get anything. I fell and broke my leg.
Oh, goodness.
I was in a restaurant. I was on my way out, and somebody said, do something. So I grabbed the microphone. I fell over in the stage, broke the leg. My hips are gone, and I'm 91, and it's not fun. And I cannot run, and that's I'm afraid my body's done.
So in your case, break a leg actually happened that
night.
Oh,
yeah, it really happened.
My goodness. Now, it's interesting. 91, nobody would guess that you're 91, but what is life like at 91?
They don't have to guess. I'll tell them, Scott. I tell my body tells me I'm 91.
Well, what is life like at 91?
It's about the same as it was at 90. You want to do the things, you know, that you did before, but you just, I could do it, actually, up until the time I broke this leg. But, I can't do the athletic things that I used to do, but as long as you're still in the life, I just want to stay around long enough to see what happens with Trump.
Well, what do you make of what's happened so far, the first 6 months?
Well, you know, I worked for him in Atlantic City. I mean, I met him maybe one time, one or two times. But from the very beginning, the man does not belong in that capacity. And the things that he did before with about the women and about all of the things that he did, the man, I cannot understand America, which is the greatest land in the world, that the people actually voted for this man. And, I mean, every time I say that, they curse Hillary, you know. It's just a weird thing that this man didn't belong in this situation. And I talked to Putin. Putin said, "Drugi mnie habotski, niet, vodi mnie chado do te Putin, tristatutin, mnie chadzo ihe trompe." So we had that discussion, he and I.
Was there a translation for that?
Yeah, I'm kicking out all of the people from Russia. They're getting rid of 755 people. I mean, it's like a game. Somebody's going to make a board game out of this, like Monopoly, you know?
It's unbelievable. The night he got elected, did you think he would ever get elected?
No, there was no way. And I there's a guy that I said, I go to the race book, and there's a guy from the South, and he really is, he hated the Democrats, and he hated Hillary and everything else. And he was, but I would fight with this man, with the man almost to kill. And he said, I won't tell you something. This man's making a few mistakes, but I won't tell you. He's great. He's wonderful. Look what he's done for this country. I said, what has he done? And then now he's got the Italian guy. Let me tell you something. Being married to an Italian and being around it, this is the worst thing that ever happened. This guy lasts 1 month.
You don't think he's got Scaramucci?
No, he was. This is a hoodlum, this guy. This is a lucky hoodlum. I don't know how he made his money. Well, I know how he made his money. He's Italian, and he had that background, you know.
You know, Shecky, I want to discuss this with you because it's kind of interesting. You know, we're on our regular radio here, terrestrial radio. There are certain words you can't say. So when somebody like that says the words that he said last week, I mean, what do you think? This is coming from the White House.
Well, first of all, that's frightening. Those same words are being used by comedians. I hate to make this transition and this from one to another like this, but I see these young kids today, and some of them are brilliant. Some of my observations are brilliant, and I think it's. But I mean, to use this language for entertainment or conversation, it's now it's become ridiculous. You cannot go to a movie, Scott. And sit there without 14 of the 3 minutes, 14 words like that come out, and it's ridiculous. It's not entertainment. It's not enjoyable. It doesn't make anybody a stronger personality with this thing. That's what they use it for.
Was there not an incident where you left the Friars Club over bad language?
Isn't that amazing? Well, it wasn't. It was something dirty. Yes. And a guy, there was young kids in the audience and everything else, and they saved me for last. I didn't want to go on, and I flew to New York, and they told me, you just have to be there. But then when they told me that I have to go on, I was okay. And then Gilbert?
Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried, who was should have stayed a rabbit, you know. Oh, duck. He should have stayed a duck.
Geico, yes.
Yeah. And I met him, and I liked the kid and everything else, and I heard that he does that. But it's fine, but not when there were a lot of young kids, and it wasn't this kind of operation. So Joy Behar, who I'm not too fond of, she may be very good. She's an ex-teacher, and I would like to see her class. But she said, what is he? Was he born in a convent? About me.
Oh.
Well, it's not the idea of being born in a convent. It's what's right, you know.
Well, in your stage performance, was there ever a decision made about using certain language or not using certain language?
Well, when I worked, believe this or not, I even worked strip joints, and they wouldn't allow me to say hell, which I just did. But we were conditioned to that, you know. You didn't have to have that. Some places you walked in, I said, no blue materials. So I never wore a blue suit. I forgot. I didn't know they meant the other thing, you know. But in those days, and I'm talking about tough guys owning these clubs, hey, I'll tell you the truth. You say one word like that, and you're in the alley. You know what I mean, kid? You know. So we were conditioned, but now it's so open and it's frightening. And the girls come out. There's what's her name, Silverman, and the other one, Schumer.
Oh, Schumer, Amy Schumer, yes.
Yeah, I like to take them and wash their mouth.
You know, do you think it is a lack of material? What causes this?
No, it's a shock value. It's black kids, and some of them are brilliant, but they just got to use that stuff. It gives them a power, you know, to tell an audience of 500 to 1,000, that kind of word. It gives them a power over this audience. And the audience laughs, and then the audience goes out and says, well, they were kind of dirty, you know. Yeah. I want to tell you, I was in that audience, and that boy said that word 10 times. I don't think I'm going to see him, but he was funny. You know.
Well,
I don't know. It's frightening to me.
It certainly is a different world. Have you seen things? You're out there in California. Have things changed since Trump got elected?
No, I don't. I'm not able to get out that way. But I mean, everybody I talk to, and you can get into an argument, and when somebody defends Trump, you know, I have to walk away. I mean, and people listening to you today probably will not like me for saying this, but I just think the man does not belong. And the man gave us that indication way before. Now, I don't say Hillary should have won, although, you know, who was else to vote for? And then we'd look at who was the list of Republicans. Nobody knew any of those guys, you know.
So,
I never was a political satirist. What's the one kid? He's an Irish Jewish kid. The kid, he's got his own program. I don't know. Does a thing on religion.
Bill Maher.
Bill Maher. I want to take and slap him every time. He and I had a face-off one day. But I just Colbert I like. I think Colbert's great, you know. But I'm not into the political satirist stuff anyway. I'm from the old school. You tell a joke, you do an accent, you know. So I want to tell you something. I went to a place in Cleveland, Ohio. I saw a comedian, Chucky Green Boy, was good. He sang, he danced, he did everything. You know, that's the type of thing I do.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you this. On the Internet, because you never know what is on the Internet, if it's correct or if it's not. It says you were born Fred Sheldon Greenfield. Is that correct?
Yeah, who was he?
Yeah, I didn't know. How did we get to Shecky Green?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting thing. Everything that I'm going to say is interesting to me. I mean, if I can only find two other people to find it interesting, I'm going back to work. But my name is Fred Sheldon Greenfield. I never used Fred. It was named after, we're all named after dead people in Jewish. You're named after a dead aunt or a dead cousin. As a matter of fact, my uncle, Al, was still living, and I wanted the name Al, so I killed him to get his name. But they wouldn't give it to me, you know. But Fred Sheldon Greenfield, but my brother, I have a brother who's 2 years older than I am, and he started calling me Shecky. We don't know why. And then that stuck. I went all through school with Shecky and that, so when I started to make a little noise in show business and I was making a little money, my brother would write me and I guess with jealousy, he had this, hey, he says, I knew you when you were Sheldon Greenfield. You know, I don't know Shecky Green. I knew you when you were Sheldon Greenfield. I mean, vicious. So whenever I called him, I'd say, hello, Marv. This is Fred Sheldon Greenfield.
You know, Shecky, it's interesting because when you hit it in show business, a lot of us don't know what this is like, but when you become famous, when people know who you are and you do not know them, what is that like?
When you're talking about the general masses?
Yeah, when you become popular back in the days when there were three channels and you hit a home run.
Scott, I'm going to tell you, that's the greatest feeling in the world to me. I sat with Buddy Hackett, who was a strange man. And Buddy Hackett one day was sitting having lunch with me, and this is the way Buddy Hackett talked. So Buddy Hackett was sitting there, and a lady came up, and she said, with a paper, and she said, "Buddy, could I please have your autograph?" He said, "Don't you see I'm eating?" So he took the paper and put it in his salad and wrote his name, and then he gave it to her. And I said, "Buddy, why would you do a thing like that?" He said, "I don't like anybody coming up to me when I'm eating." Well, that never bothered me. The joy of somebody coming up to me, taking their time to come up to me, you know? Matter of fact, I used to go in the crowds and say, "Anybody want to come up to me? I'm not eating a salad."
I want to talk about some of the people you... Well, I want to talk about World War II. You were a part of World War II.
Oh, are you joking?
Well,
you want to hear about... I was aboard an aircraft carrier called the Bonhomme Richard CV-31 Essex-class carrier. 3,100-man complement during wartime, 27,000 tons. 727-2791 was my serial number. Kellogg's K was my serial. Anyway, I got aboard ship, and they put me in charge of the ice cream stand.
Really? Is that what's...
It's called the Gidong stand in the Navy, and I was in charge of the ice cream stand.
Oh, my goodness.
And, other guys were shooting at the Japanese. I was throwing chocolate and strawberry, you know. Some place there's a Japanese guy going, "Oh, through the war, I get a strawberry."
You know, oh my goodness, Shecky, this was weird because one time, you know Marty Allen, I'm sure.
Well, I see Marty Allen now. Marty Allen and I both wear canes.
he's up there. He's older. He's 95 now.
Yeah, he was 95, 96 years old.
I do it. But I did hear Marty Allen, this crazy guy with the crazy hair, actually has a Purple Heart from World War II for saving people when a ship was going to be bombed. I mean, it's amazing the things you don't know about people.
He's a nice man, Marty. He really, really a very nice man. I think he should comb his hair. It would be better. And Buddy Hackett talks on one side, and Marty talks on the other side.
They do. They both kind of talk out of one side of their mouth.
Yeah, and I go with them to explain to people what they're both saying. I talk straight. But he's a lovely man, Marty. And he's still working. He and his wife are still working.
Well, that's interesting. You know, a lot of people, George Burns, I think, went to 99.
Oh, let me tell you. You're talking about Scotch. George Burns and I were very close. George Burns once said to me, "Shecky, want to talk to you." This is what George Burns talked. And then. He said, "Want to talk to you because people tell me you drink and I never saw you drunk. And I want to talk to you." So he calls me. He said, "I want you to come to my dressing room." He says, "I want to talk to you." So I went to his dressing room. He says, "Shecky, I saw you drunk last night. I couldn't believe it." And he says, "And I want to thank you." I said, "You want to thank me for being drunk?" He says, "No, because I saw you." He says, "I have two martinis every day, and now I'm knocking one off." True story has got as my judge.
Well, you know, what was it about people of that era, George Burns, Bob Hope, those type of people, where they, you know, were they ever off? Did they ever just sit and talk about the world?
Oh, all the time. Are you kidding? That was the joy of my life, sitting with those people and listening. George Burns and Jack Benny.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the other day I saw George Burns. It was a tape of him on the Phil Donahue show. And even when Phil would try to be serious, George was funny. So I thought, I wonder if there was a time when he was off. Well, what did George Burns think of life? What was he like when he was not telling jokes?
No, that's the way his mind worked. He would, no matter, he would sit with you, you know, and he, when something happened, that he'd throw in a joke, throw in a line, like, and make Jack Benny fall on the floor. Jack Benny loved him, you know. They were very close, and you just imagine Jack Benny or George Burns or Bob Hope, them using that language that we got today. Could you believe? George Burns? And I want to tell you something. The Yeah, you can't picture it.
No, it wouldn't work. But, you know, Jack Benny, they called him radio's biggest star. What was it about Jack Benny that made all the stars today all look up to Jack Benny?
It was timing. It's matter of fact, Jack, let me tell you this. There was a man called Frank Fay. Did you ever hear that name?
I have heard that name.
Okay, Frank Fay was a comedian, but he was a very sophisticated type of comedian, and he used to MC shows in theaters and stuff, which Bob Hope did later on, the same thing. But anyway, Frank Fay had a way of working, and Jack Benny took that style. He made it better than Frank Fay, but he took the style of Frank Fay.
Well, it seems like every time I watch PBS, whether it's Jack Paar or Johnny Carson or any Jay Leno, David Letterman, Jack Benny is the guy they look to. It's like as if there was nobody else before Jack Benny.
Well, I think it just was the timing. And that's what makes any performer that once you get that kind of timing, you develop people develop a knowledge of their personality. If you notice that the ones that really make it are personality performers. You can have all the talent in the world. You can dance, you can sing, you can do impressions. But if there's nothing that you see in that personality, I mean, sometimes, he does too much. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's that, now golly, marry and tell the kid to sing. Now cut that out. You know?
That's right.
When you hear that, you know that personality. Rickles had that. Rickles, you know, I'm the one that brought him to Vegas, but which I was sorry later because he passed me by. But Rickles had that personality, and that's what the audience got with. And most people that become big, big stars, it's the personality.
What?
It's the personality that makes them great. I developed a personality just a little bit too late. But don't you worry, everybody. You're going to laugh at my jokes because I'm going to get a personality. I'm telling all you folks. Okay.
Well, this is a full show today. I didn't know we were going to have...
I've been waiting. Are you kidding? I'm in this bed waiting for somebody to call me. They said to me, Scott. I said, put him on.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I don't even know. I lost my train of thought there. But, I know where I was going. The first time you went up on stage, how do you decide you're going to be a stand-up comedian? How do you know what's funny and what's not? How does it work?
Well, that's very interesting because we should have a discussion on it. I'm going to tell you, sometimes I panic. I'd be on the stage panicking. I was different than I think most people. They wanted it and they loved it. It came naturally to me, but I didn't want it. I didn't think this is what I was going to do for a living, you know? And I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to be a comedian. I'm going to be in show business. I didn't want that. But I had that ability, and my brother was very, very talented. He did the dialects, and I did everything he did. He should have been in show business, my brother, and I would have called him Shecky. But he wouldn't have liked that either. But I panic. What's ringing? Is it Christmas?
That's a nice little background music there.
I thought it's good. Could be Christmas. In August, it's ringing Christmas bells. What do I hear all around? In August, I'm hearing Christmas bells. They don't belong in this town. What could I do, dear friend Scott? Tell me real quick. Okay, anyway, I didn't want to. And when I get on stage, sometimes I panic. Until maybe that first little joke goes over, you know?
Well, you know, a lot of people remember that you had this bout with actual panic attacks.
Oh, I had them for years. Oh, my God. They gave me Xanax, and every time a Xanax was driving me crazy, I'd call the doctor. He would say to me, you know what you'll do? You'll take more Xanax. Take two more Xanax, and already call me in the morning. And if you die, don't call me.
Well, what is that fear like? What's the difference between panic and a panic attack?
Well, it is a panic. panic attack. That's what it is. But I'm going to tell you, there's nothing worse than that. You know, I'm on the stage one day at the Sands Hotel, and who's in the audience but Cary Grant? My goodness gracious, we're going to see Jackie Greene. My goodness. So anyway, I'm on stage, and I work, and I do a little thing about him, and I come up, he says, you were scared to death, weren't you? I said, well, I'd have a little freak. He said, I did too. When I worked on the stage, I was the same way. People never knew it. Archibald Leach was frightened to death.
Well, what is it that propelled you to get up on the stage?
It's called money. Oh, it's wonderful. At the end of the week, you don't feel any panic attacks. When the guy comes up and says, here's your check. Oh, my God. What a great fit. That don't happen on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That only happens on Saturday.
At the height of your success, not to get into dollars and cents, but what range were you in money-wise?
$100,000.
$100,000 per week?
$100,000 per week.
My goodness.
And if any human being, I started off in the little resort. I got $10 for the week. And then, but I never, money, see that? That frightened me. The more money I was getting, am I worth this? You know, I really would go home and say, am I worth this? And then I found a wife that she found out she was worth that. So she took it in a thing called alimony. That's no baloney. She got it in alimony. She got all my money. It's a fact. That's the kick I'm on right now. I'm making up songs to everything.
Well, anytime you want to drop one off, just go, keep going.
No, my wife keeps on yelling, shut up!
No.
Shut up! And my dog thinks that's her name now, is shut up. She only comes when she hears my wife yell, shut up!
I want to throw some names at you, Shecky. You tell your remembrances of these people. Let's talk about Ed Sullivan.
Oh, my God. You got to have me on for 4 days.
We might have to. Might be a series.
Right here on my show today, I have a young fellow, Chucky, from Las Vegas, Nevada. Let's bring him out right now here. Chucky. Now, I'm on the show, and he says to me, I got 8 minutes. And he says to me, Chucky, I want you to cut that. Because we don't have time. I want you to cut that time now down to 2 minutes. I said, I can't do 2 minutes, Ed. Who could do 2 minutes comedy? So anyway, what I did is I took a microphone apart, and I turned it over, and I talked to minors. From the top of the microphone down, I'm pretending I'm talking to minors. I said, there's Mary, the miners are buried under tons and tons of coal. And I yelled down, you weren't hurt, it was soft coal. What's that? The bird died? That's a gas. And that's the only thing I can do in 2 minutes. Well, at the time that I was doing that, there was a mine disaster in Nova Scotia. True story, Scott.
just
I'm walking off the stage and he grabs me. You dirty no good rat, you. You just lost me Canada. I said, what? I didn't know there was a mine disaster. You just lost me Canada.
So, Ed kind of talked like a mobster. You know, good dirty rat?
He was a mobster about his show.
I bet.
And you want to know something? It was his 11th anniversary, and I'm on the show. So I walked out. I says, introduce me as a comedian from Germany. You just got back from Europe, and I'm a comedian from Germany, and you brought me. I want to ask you something, Chicky. What do you mean you're going to be a comedian? I said, just introduce me that way. So he brings me out. I said, ladies and gentlemen, a pleasure to be ready on Mr. Sullivan's 11th anniversary. And there's 11 years he's been on. And the reason why, there's nothing to hate. He don't sing. He don't dance. He don't tell jokes. He don't do nothing. Well, he got so crazy. He grabbed me and he says, I want to tell you, I got more talent on my little finger than anybody I've ever had on this show. I said, you're sick.
Well, you know, I've heard from a lot of people that Ed really was just lucky, that he really didn't know exactly what he was doing.
No, now let me explain to you that. So you happen to get to the right guy today, because I've got nothing to do, so I'm going to break the other leg.
Go ahead.
Ed Sullivan, Milton Berle used to host what the hell was the dance thing in the fall? I forget what they called it, but it was every fall they had this dance, and they would go into theaters. They would go on tour. Harvest Moon Festival, that was called. So they would go into theaters, big theaters all across the country, and Milton Berle would MC the thing. So one time Milton Berle couldn't do it, and he says, get Ed Sullivan, because Ed Sullivan, you know, gets up on things. So they used Ed Sullivan to go on the theaters, and that became a thing for him, to go with these groups, and that's how they got the show, the Ed Sullivan Show.
Well, why was it that Ed Sullivan became a staple in television and Milton Berle, who was famously talented, really only had the one success?
Oh, no. Scott, no.
No, I'm wrong.
Yes, you're wrong. Berle, I mean, you couldn't be any bigger than Berle.
Well, right, but you know what's fascinating about Berle is he did the Texaco Star Theater. NBC gave him a lifetime contract, but once the Star Theater was over, was there another successful television show?
No, because by that time things started to bounce and things started to come in, you know, and it was just over. It was time for it to be over. But I mean, every Sunday people just were glued to their television, and it was that big. But Berle stayed big, you know.
What was he like? People say he was a perfectionist, difficult.
I loved Berle, and he was. Berle was a little crazy on his side, but I loved Berle. He was what he was. He was a clown, you know. He was a Red Skelton. Red Skelton was nuts, too. I mean, I had things with Red Skelton you wouldn't believe. And Red Skelton was brilliant. Red Skelton was at the Riviera, and I'm at the Riviera. He says, oh, Shaky, God bless. Could you come? I got a brand new car, Rolls Royce. Could you come down? So I came down. We looked at his Rolls Royce, and he starts screaming and yelling and crying and throwing up. And I said, what's the matter? They gave him the wrong color, Rolls Royce. And when he saw the color of that, Scott, when he saw the color of that car, he got crazy. Oh, Shaky, look what they did to me, Shaky. Oh, God bless. You know? And I said, Red, they'll get you another color. You know, they'll get you a fire wagon if you want.
Well, you know, the guy who loved you was Johnny Carson. How many times were you on The Tonight Show?
A lot, and then I hosted it. But I'm going to tell you, I like Johnny Carson very much. I knew Johnny Carson from way back. But there was no getting to Johnny Carson. You didn't feel that you had that real close friend. You knew he liked you and you liked him, but it wasn't the kind of guy that you want to have as your best friend and call up on the phone, you know. It sounds terrible, and people are going to think that's wrong, but he really couldn't, and the more popular he became, the further he drifted off.
What was it about the Johnny Carson show that makes it the gold standard in late night television?
Well, it's like if you made the Carson show or the Sullivan show, you know, those many, that 16, 20 million people see you in one shot. So automatically you go from working a little cockamamie room to 16, 20 people saying, you know something, we were watching television and we saw you last night. My goodness gracious, you did a terrible thing about the coal miners. it's an amazing thing. But before Carson, I did Allen. Steve Allen was the best.
Now, did you ever do Jack Parr?
Nope, never. He never won. And another one is David Letterman. There's a place called the Comedy Store, and the Comedy Store in Los Angeles was started by my ex-partner, my first partner in show business, Sammy Shore, and another guy, and his wife. Now, when she went to get the Comedy Store, she only had a lease, and the guy in the back room had he had the lease. So she wanted the Comedy Store. So she says, how could I went and I got it for her. I went to Frank Senes, who was the owner of that property, Ciro's, which was a nightclub, which became the Comedy Store, and I got her that place. They have never mentioned my name, and David Letterman got noticed that that's where he got found. They found him. And you would think that with all those kids knowing about, he would have asked me on his show. Never. And I never knew why. I never met him. I never saw him. And I never knew why. His and another one was Laugh-In. Anti-Semite. I think the guy that did the show, George Slaughter, was an anti-Semite. Because he had a funny uniform and a mustache when I met him.
Well, that might do it. That's always a good tip-off. You're gonna lose me Germany, Shecky. You're gonna lose me Germany.
No, Germany. I love Germany. Are you kidding?
Oh my goodness, we're gonna be.
Can RVs be out Germany as long as there's a Trump? Cause when he says Miss Merkel, they give each other a bump, 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 bump. Okay.
Well, you know, when you get to that point, last night on CNN. They had a special on comedy, and they talked about comedy and depression. They talked about Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams, who suffered from depression. Do you think there's a parallel there?
Well, I don't know why it works that way, because there's depression in all works and all people's and different lives and stuff. But I also have terrible depression. I suffered with, because my mother suffered with depression. She taught me depression, my mother. Other mothers teach English and mathematics and skills. My mother taught me depression. Okay, put that down. You're smiling. Okay, Ma. You know. But let me tell you a great story, because you mentioned Jonathan Winters. Jonathan Winters and I were aboard ship together in the Navy 2 years. We did a few shows. Jonathan Winters was brilliant. But the Jonathan Winters, with all the things that he did, see, there wasn't the personality that came out. So Jonathan Winters got very big, but not as big as he should have been, you know, in movies and stuff. But Jonathan Winters says to me one time, we're in a drugstore. He says, let me have your orange juice. And he took 6 pills. He just got out of the crazy house. He took 6 pills and with the orange juice. He says, you know why I'm this way? Did you see Bridge of the River Kwai? I said, yeah. He says, did you see where Alec Guinness was in those things? The Japanese had them in those cans. I said, yeah. He said, I was in one of those. I said, you were? He says, yeah, I was in one of those. That's why I'm like I am. I said, Jonathan, there were millions of people in the service. Why did you have to tell me that story? I was aboard ship with you. I find it hard to believe that the Japanese got aboard our ship, bypassed the admiral, bypassed the captains, the flight crew, and went and came to get a guy, private first class Marine.
seems a little...
Now, when I would see Robin Williams, my right hand to God, because I have studied a little psychiatry, being a little bit off the wall. Matter of fact, I chopped on many of the people, said, you're off the wall. I chopped on every wall I would see. I didn't want to be off the wall. The windows were all right. I'd stay on a window.
Well, that's good. Good to hear.
But anyway, Jonathan, when I saw Robin Williams, all the years that I watched this brilliant, brilliant genius, I says, the people don't know the anxiety he's going through. When he works up and gets tight, when he goes to do those routines he did, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That what happens to your body when you're really on, and like do the understand, you're really feeling that tightness and that thing, and you want to get like this, you want to go and so I kept on saying something's going to happen to him. Doesn't anybody see what I see in this man? You know.
Yeah.
And go take a look what he did.
Horribly sad ending.
With a belt, and somebody said to me, would you feel like doing that? I said, no, I wear suspenders. Jeez.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing, Shecky. Is there a line that comics can't cross? There's a big discussion of this in the Trump era. Is there a line? Did Kathy Griffin do the wrong thing with that ketchup head of Trump?
Well, I'm not a Kathy Griffin fan, so you're asking the wrong guy. I don't know. There's something about her that's just strange. But you want to know something? Yes, she did the wrong thing. I mean, and although, as you could say, Trump, what Trump does, I mean, Trump has done the wrong thing, you know. Trump has got Trump Towers, and he asks everybody to come to the tower, and he's wearing a king's helm, a king's crown. You can't go to the tower with Trump. But Kathy Griffin did the wrong thing. Well, I think it's going to hurt her career. I really do.
Where is the line in comedy? What don't you joke about?
We never know. Scott, that's the funny part. One guy like Richard Pryor could get on and say things that are the most disgusting things and get away with it. Another guy, a white kid, can get up there and do those things and forget about it. They destroy him.
Who, in your opinion, was the greatest comedian?
Oh, no, no. No, no. No, we'd be here. There was a jester that worked for King Henry. And every time that King Henry brought one of his wives to the tower, the jester would do an act. I mean, that's the most ridiculous. You can't say who was the best and who wasn't the best.
Well, maybe this is the question. Phyllis Diller was on this show a lot, probably 30, 40 times. And Phyllis became a good, you know, telephone friend. I would consider her somebody I could call in a pinch.
I loved her.
Great woman. And I think I've told this story on air before, but not with you, so this will be new to you. But when Phyllis was 95, I called her office one day to set up an interview, and they said, because she came on every year for her birthday.
Yeah.
And Phyllis said, well, her secretary said, well, let me make sure she can do it. And then her son called me because he knew that we were somewhat close, and he said, listen, he said, Mom has actually had some strokes at 95, and you might want to, but she really wants to do the interview, but she's not doing any other press. So you might want to tape the interview because sometimes she says,
yeah, she'll get off.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, that's fine. We can tape it. But I got a little worried because Phyllis had been on so much and I loved her, and I didn't want to, I was worried that it was going to be bad. And we got on, and I said, Phyllis, how does it feel to be 95? And she said, well, you know, it feels like 94, 93. And I said, well, Phyllis, do you believe in a hereafter? And she said, no. She said, this is it. There's nothing when we leave here. And I said, Phyllis, I said, I just saw you about a year ago on Celebrity Ghost Story where you said you believed in ghosts. So I said, you believe in ghosts, but you don't believe in the hereafter. She said, well, I did for the money they paid me temporarily. And it was funny. she said she believed in ghosts temporarily for the money they had paid her. And I thought, and that laugh came out, and I knew we'd be okay. And we were. And she died a month later. Hard to believe.
Well, it's interesting that you said this, because I'm going to tell you. Phyllis Diller was working a place called the Purple Onion in San Francisco. We're two boys, and I used to go into San Francisco a lot. So I went into this place with some friends, and the Smothers Brothers were there, and Phyllis Diller. It was like one of the comedy places that they opened up in San Francisco. It was her first job, and she did a thing with a scrapbook of a dress that she made, you know, and she was cute. But I said, this old lady, this is her first show. Scott.
Yeah.
I said, this old lady, what is she going to do? What the hell's going to happen with this woman? Well, look at how the big star she became.
She did.
And I'm rightly so, because I loved her.
And
you know?
She was a kind woman.
She was just good. She was a wonderful lady. Anyway, she married some Malagata Fajan. I had dinner with them, and I don't know how she married that. You know, you get lonely in this business. And then the Smothers Brothers, I really, that to me altogether, I said, my God, maybe it was the place, you know.
might have been. You know, I want to talk, what are your memories of Bob Hope?
Well, Bob and I were very close friends. He was very cheap.
Oh, he was.
I did this thing for Bob. But Bob, as a friend, I loved him. You know, I got the wonderful thing in my life. Is in this business, you know, when you're a kid and you see all of these people and you idolize, you see them on the movies, the screen, and you see them on stage, and then all of a sudden you meet these people. And Scott, you can't believe it. You just say, am I really in this situation? And not only do you meet him, but you go to dinner with him, you know, you go out with him. And Bob called me one day. True story, is God is my judge. And I'm not even religious. Do you hear me, God? God's from Ohio. You know that, don't you?
I didn't know that.
He's right now. He's in Cleveland. I got a call from him. what was I just going to say about
Bob Hope?
Yeah, what story was I going to tell?
You said you were having dinner with these people, and
oh no, I was going. I was working in Chicago at the College Inn, the hotel there. So I get a call from Bob, and Bob says, I'm in Iowa. And I says, yeah. He says, what time do you go on? And I said, I go on about 9 o'clock. He says, could you hold the show about a half hour? He says, I'm going to get an Army plane. I want to come in and see you. I said, what? Are you joking? Sure enough, I'm on stage, and in comes Bob Hope. Got an Army plane from Iowa to come to see me. Now, you got to know that the guy likes you if he does that. I'm about 4 weeks later, I'm in Vegas. I'm working. I get a call. Hello, Shecky? Yeah. He was some other place. He says, what time you go on? I told him. And he flew in for that, you know? So to have that kind of feeling that a Bob Hope would do this, and of course, he got on stage with me, and he made everything. But to think that Bob Hope or Groucho Marx one day stood up. Now, it sounds like I'm bragging, and I am bragging, because these are the most wonderful things. Groucho Marx got up in the middle, stopped the show, and said, this is the greatest comedian you people are going to ever see. Now, whether he meant that or he didn't mean it, that's not the point. But to know that these people, and then Bing Crosby and I were very close. I did a lot of shows with Bing. So to be around the idols that you grew up with, I mean, forget about the $100,000. That's what makes everything.
I think you're right. Shecky, we're just about out of time. Before we go, though, is there an 11 o'clock number you want to hit us with here, all these great songs we've heard? Is there something rolling around in your brain?
Ohio, Ohio, let me tell you about Ohio. I went to Ohio University. It's a great college. I learned lots of knowledge. You could do the same as me. Everybody in Ohio. Scott, thank you for calling me. Thank you for having me. And I will do everything that our Phyllis Diller did when you call.
Well, Shecky Green, you brought us today something that we need in this world, and those are laps. So maybe we will do a mini-series. I'll be calling you soon.
All right, pal.
Thank you, Shecky.
Say hello to Shalyn.
I will do.
Right.
Shecky Green, nobody funnier, nobody more legendary. What fun that was. Pat Brickhouse coming up in 10 minutes. Stay tuned.
He has no humor about it at all. He says this is the way it is. And, you know.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071. Search for us on Facebook.